Family of four found dead in their small town Saskatchewan home. Farm that didn't protect migrant workers from COVID-19 faces a $125,000 fine. Woman who has applied for medical assistance in dying is closer to MAID after a Calgary judge tossed out her father's attempt to stop her decision. Everything you need to know about the Key Bridge collapse in Baltimore yesterday, and Julian Assange granted a temporary reprieve. Good morning. It's Wednesday, March 27th. I'm Nora. Here are your headlines. To Newdorf, Saskatchewan this morning, where a family of four has been found dead in their home by police. The police were responding to a wellness check, reports the Canadian Press. Newdorf is about 130 kilometers east of Regina. The four people were all adults, and two were parents, two were children. Their names have not been released yet to the public. The police have said that the deaths are suspicious, but didn't say if they were looking for a suspect or what the cause was. Information that, you know, is kind of important if a suspect were at large. And that's all we know about this tragedy so far. Next to southwestern Ontario, where Scotland Sweetpack Growers, a vegetable farm in Victoria, has been fined $125,000 related to the death of Juan Lopez Chaparro. You will remember this story. Chaparro was a migrant worker who was in Canada at the start of the pandemic. At the farm where he worked, there was a massive outbreak, and 200 or so workers tested positive for COVID-19. CBC's Kate Dubinsky reports that the farm was facing 20 charges, and they pled guilty. Dubinsky notes that the court could have charged up to $1.5 million, and Syed Hassan from the Migrant Workers Alliance for Change said this, quote, "This fine is mere peanuts to a multi-million dollar corporation, and it shows yet again what's needed is change at the federal government level. Migrants need permanent resident status to protect themselves," unquote. Scotland workers had to share sleeping quarters with 50 other workers, something that even at the time was known to be high risk for transmission of COVID-19, especially if someone in those quarters had COVID-19. Chaparro had been bedridden with COVID for days in the bunkhouse and was never given a place to isolate. Scotland Farms didn't enforce screening protocols consistently, Dubinsky reports. Luis Gabriel Flores spoke out about the conditions at the farm, and he was fired. Scotland eventually was ordered to pay Flores $25,000. In the book that I wrote about COVID-19 and how Canada managed the pandemic, I had a whole chapter on migrant workers, including Flores's case and Chaparro's death. The farm owners, including Scotland's Scott Biddle, insisted that things were safe, and often they were given the benefit of the doubt from journalists. Though the conditions in the industry and the organized resistance by migrant workers also meant that this was one of the few locations where we had consistent and critical reporting on the conditions that migrant workers were facing. As a result, we knew a lot more that was happening within those industries than, say, manufacturing or construction or large resource extraction projects. Next to a heartbreaking story about MAID and what happens when government makes it easier for people to request assisted suicide than to get them support. CTV's Brendan Ellis is reporting that a judge has ruled that a woman has the right to act as medical assistance in dying. She's 27, and her father tried to intervene in her decision and stop it through the courts. The woman's family has the right to appeal the decision, and so the woman is not allowed to seek MAID for the next 30 days at least. Two doctors approved her application for MAID, but her father said that she's vulnerable and cannot make the decision on her own because she's not competent. In court documents, her father said that she is, quote, generally healthy and believes that her physical symptoms, to the extent that she has any, result from undiagnosed psychological condition, unquote. The Calgary judge, Justice Colin Feasby, ruled this, quote, MV's dignity and right to self-determination outweighs the important matters raised by WV. WV's the father, MV's the daughter, and the harm that he will suffer in losing MV, unquote. It's a fascinating way to look at this because there is no right to self-determination and dignity that comes from demanding that the state pay for your suicide if you are not disabled, which is just, I mean, the biggest packet of ableism that we can kind of point to right now within the Canadian system. The woman has been diagnosed with autism and ADHD, neither of which would stop her from being able to choose MAID, though neither either should qualify her alone for MAID either. She did not reveal any diagnoses or other suffering that she experiences in court documents, as the court wasn't evaluating her eligibility for MAID, simply whether or not she has the right to make the decision and the competency to make the decision herself. This is only possible because Canada expanded MAID for people whose death is not reasonably foreseeable only in 2021. A person has to demonstrate that they live with an egregious and irremediable health condition. And that's all it takes to be approved for medical assistance in dying in Canada. As disability activists point out, though, this only legalizes suicide for disabled people, and doctors are often far too quick to approve an application for MAID, or worse, push or suggest that someone consider MAID when they're facing whatever issues they're facing. Earlier this year, the government announced that it would postpone their plan to allow people whose only illness is mental illness to apply for MAID. Next, to a group that I haven't mentioned in a long time, but who I have mentioned before and who I find pretty confusing, and this is quite the story. The Canadian Ombudsman for Responsible Enterprise has finally leveled its first accusation. Yes, the first one since the government created CORE in 2018. You will remember that this group was created by the federal government to look at human rights abuses within Canadian corporations abroad. And recall that despite the fact that Canadian mining corporations are famously engaged in abusive tactics all over the world, CORE has been primarily focused on China, not just in mining, but in China in general, with forced labor of Uyghur Chinese. Well, this first accusation is leveled against Dynasty Gold Corp. CORE says that they have forced labor at a gold mine in Xinjiang. Dynasty has called the allegations baseless and that the timelines, quote, make no sense, unquote, mainly because the firm was not actually in control of the mine when the forced labor allegedly happened. CORE's ombudsman, Sherry Mayerhofer, said that Uyghur forced labor, quote, likely took place at the Hatu Chitu gold mine, unquote. CEO of Dynasty, Ivy Chong, told the Canadian Press's Dylan Robertson that despite being in close contact with the federal government and the embassy in Beijing, no one had ever told the company that they were being accused of violating human rights. That does not jibe with Mayerhofer's claim that the company was uncooperative and refused to participate in the investigation. Robertson goes into China's official line about oppression against Uyghurs, which I'm going to skip because honestly, we've all heard it before. And I think the more interesting story is the actual mine's operations and what we know about it. Because what is baffling is that the allegations that forced Uyghur workers were used in the mine date back to 2015 to 2020. Now, Dynasty lost control of the mine way before that. In 2008. It's actually the Chinese government that is in control of the mine. And so any forced labor, technically in this case, would be the fault of the Chinese government. But anyway, here's how Mayerhofer has linked Dynasty to the forced labor. The company is the majority shareholder of a company called Terexin. That is a joint entity with Chinese national companies, and it seems as if Dynasty has actually lost control against its will. Dynasty has been fighting to recoup lost money over the Chinese state companies gaining more control over their operations. The report argued that Dynasty should have forced the Chinese government to end the forced labor that's happening at the mine. Dynasty, should be mentioned, is a pretty small company. Mayerhofer was irritated that Dynasty didn't cooperate and thinks that they should have agreed to come up with a confidential plan to end their business operations in China or to, quote, advance human rights if it did get control over the mine, unquote. I will note that Mining Watch, Canada's foremost mining abuses organization and watchdog, doesn't have a single pinpoint on their map in China for Canadian mines that are violating human rights. There are more than two dozen pinpoints, though, in other parts of the world, but mostly in the Americas. Now, with CORE spending so much time in China on human rights abuses there, I guess they've just missed the other mining human rights abuses that are well documented by Canadian companies operating elsewhere. Next to Baltimore, where the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed in a matter of seconds, caught in a stunning video that was widely shared yesterday. Bloomberg is reporting that a container ship, the Dolly, was leaving the port of Baltimore when it hit the bridge and the entire thing collapsed. Six construction workers have still not been confirmed alive. The bridge is a key transportation node. It carries 35 million vehicles annually and facilitates transportation to the port. It handles more than 10 million tons of cargo each year. All shipping traffic has been halted, and vehicles have been redirected to tunnels under the harbor. However, hazardous materials are not allowed to be transferred in the tunnels, and so that will be a bottleneck that will snarl freight traffic along Interstate 95. The bridge was the world's third longest continuous truss bridge. And if you're curious, the Quebec City Bridge, it's also a truss bridge. The bridge had last been inspected in May 2021 and was rated as fair. Fair means that it's fine to continue to be used, but there might be minor damage on the bridge. The Federal Highway Administration said there was no deterioration known to have occurred on the bridge. Meanwhile, the dolly could carry 95,000 tons of merchandise and was almost as tall as the Eiffel Tower. It looked as if the dolly lost power and propulsion just before it hit the bridge's support. While the bridge was too old to have newer supporting structures that are common today, Bloomberg talked with Leslie Cook, a civil and environmental engineer professor, who explained that even if there were safety measures like that in place, the dolly was so big that it probably still would have brought the bridge down. And finally, Julian Assange's extradition has been put on hold. Yesterday, a London court ruled that the US must assure the UK that Assange will face the death penalty. The judges have allowed Assange to appeal his extradition on three grounds, but only, quote, if the U.S. failed to provide satisfactory assurances to the issues raised, unquote. Assange isn't an American and so cannot argue that he has the right to free speech as defined by the First Amendment. And while none of the charges he's facing carry a death penalty sentence, there are concerns that he could instead be tried for treason. Assange's lawyers quoted Donald Trump hinting that using the death penalty to deal with the WikiLeaks document issue is a possibility for him. The next court date for Assange is May 20th. Recall that Assange is accused because he leaked what are called the diplomatic cables through his website WikiLeaks. He also released a 2007 video of an attack in Baghdad where the United States killed a dozen people, including two Reuters news staff. Those are your headlines for Wednesday, March 27th. I'm Nora. You are listening to this podcast at sandynora.com, on the Real News Network podcast feed, or anywhere you get your podcasts. I hope you have a beautiful Wednesday today, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.